Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone. Welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 7th day of May, 2020. May the 7th be with you. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, downloading the podcast, all that good stuff. Don't forget, if you're just streaming it or whatever, don't forget to subscribe. It's free. Costs you nothing except a little piece of your soul, maybe. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Action-packed program, as we always have for you. Tomorrow, as a reminder, is the official interview edition. There will be a video, which means I got a shower. Hasn't been that long. It was in May. I don't know. Anyway, we've got Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch coming up on the program just before the halfway point. Promise you about an hour every day. Yesterday I went like 10 minutes over because I thought that audio of the Wisconsin Supreme Court case was worth hearing. And it was. So I'm not going to take that $10 credit or 10-minute credit and hold it against you. We've got an update on the case of the salon owner down in Texas. I'll get to you in a second. A lot of people calling for her to be released. Who knows? By the time this is posted, maybe she will be. She should be. But first, we've got to give a hat tip to our wonderful, wonderful sponsor, AncientLifeOil.com. That's where you can get the finest, the best, 100% pure organic CBD oil. It's not going to get you high. It's not full of THC. Don't worry about that. But it is full of little miracles. Search for yourself. Figure out. Ask around. Ask your friends. Ask the Google machine, whatever it is, or Bing, or however you search. DuckDuckGo. Whatever you use to search, look up CBD oil benefits, and you're going to read and you're going to hear your friends, and you're going to say, that's not possible. But it is possible. It's actually actual. You go to ancientlifeoil.com when you decide to give it a shot. They're having a big sale right now. You check your dosage. You figure out which size you want, what concentration you want, what flavor you want. Yes, flavor matters. I like the chocolate mint, but the cinnamon is growing on me as well. You throw that in your cart at checkout. You enter Derek in the promo code. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of everything else. You can't beat the deal. Great savings, great product, free shipping. You help the show. You help yourself. The circle of life continues. AncientLifeOil.com. Okay, let's get into it. Before, I want to play a clip. I don't play a clip from the, please forgive the screaming child in the next room. I don't play clips from the White House press briefings very often. I don't play clips from the president's, I didn't play very many clips from the president's coronavirus task force briefings just because I found them to be, I don't know, we've seen it before. But this one is different. This one is new press secretary Kayleigh McEnany, who's been a guest on this program ages ago in the video interviews, if you want to go back and find it. And it made me want to pick up the phone and call 911. I wanted to report a murder because she killed this reporter, absolutely decimated this reporter, hilariously so. And that is why I want to play it for you. This guy is, the reporter is he used to be the head of the White House Correspondents Association. I can't remember his name. I'll look it up while we listen to the clip. But this gives you a taste of what the administration is up against when it comes to dealing with the White House press corps. That's why I want to play it. Because if you just heard this really dumbass question, you would think, who let somebody in from their high school newspaper, or, you know, who's there from the Penny Saver circular? Why? What kind of a stupid question is this? This is a stupid question, but it is from a guy who's a frequent guest on at least Fox News. He's on the panel fairly regularly with Bret Baier. And it's just an incredibly dumb attempt at a gotcha question. Now, think back. You won't find anything, but I encourage you to search your memory for anything remotely similar in the Obama administration. The Obama administration, the questions that stick out are, what enchanted you the most about being Mr. President? Things like that, the throne-sniffing type of questions. This is an attempted gotcha question. This is meant not to inform the audience. There's absolutely no information that could be conveyed in response to this question, not serious information, aside from the absolute murder of the reporter verbally. So this question serves no purpose except to try and embarrass Kayleigh McEnany. I'm sure there are plenty of ways to embarrass Kayleigh McEnany, the fact that she appeared on this show, for one. But this is not a way to do that. She butchers this guy. I think his first name is Jeff. Like I said, I'll look it up. But let's listen to this exchange because it's glorious. And it is not what not what previous press secretaries have done. I could have seen, both of them do it, but they didn't do it. This was executed beautifully, and you could tell that Kayleigh McEnany, this ain't her first rodeo, because she's been on, she was a CNN contributor during the 2016 campaign, one of the few pro-Trump advocates that the CNN employed, and it was usually 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to 1 when she was on there. So this ain't her first rodeo. She knows how to handle being ganged up on, being attempted to attack and smear and distract you. She handles this, like I said, beautifully. Let's just listen to it.
Kayleigh, in a previous life, before you were press secretary, you worked for the campaign. And you made a comment, I believe, on Fox, in which you said President Trump will not allow the coronavirus to come to this country. Given what has happened since then, obviously, would you like to take that back?
Well, first, let me note, I was asked a question on Fox Business about President's travel restrictions. I noted what was the intent behind those travel restrictions, which is we will not see the coronavirus come here. We will not see terrorism come here, referring to an earlier set of travel restrictions. I guess I would turn the question back on the media and ask similar questions. Does Vox want to take back that they proclaim that the coronavirus would not be a deadly pandemic? Does the Washington Post want to take back that they told Americans to get a grip? The flu is bigger than the coronavirus. Does the Washington Post likewise want to take back that our brains are causing us to exaggerate the threat of the coronavirus? Does the New York Times want to take back that fear of the virus may be spreading faster than the virus itself? Does NPR want to take back that the flu was a much bigger threat than the coronavirus? And finally, once again, the Washington Post, would they like to take back that the government should not respond aggressively to the coronavirus? I'll leave you with those questions, and maybe you'll have some answers in a few days.
Kayleigh, you were prepared for that. The guy's name is Jeff Weaver. He works for Reuters. Or not Jeff Weaver, Jeff Mason. Sorry, I was right. He was, he's Reuters, respectable outlet. And, wire service appears in every newspaper and website across the country. Reuters. Serious, serious journalism. When you ask such a stupid question, Kayleigh, months ago, you said something, and here it is, without any context. Here's probably half a quote, maybe a quarter of a quote, at least maybe one line out of a quote, chosen explicitly to make you look bad. No one will learn anything from this. Do you now stand by that? Do you want to retract that statement? Jeff Mason, here's all the dumb shit you've said over your lifetime. Do you want to retract any of this? Here's all the stuff. Let me just take a couple of words out of context. Here's stuff that you've said. Do you want to retract? Who in the hell are these people? If you don't have any questions, there's no shame in not asking a question. But these people, these are all the questions they have. They don't ask questions designed to get information for the American people, which is supposed to be their jobs. It's all, you know, back in junior high, you once picked a booger and wiped it on the girl sitting in front of you. She is now claiming that that is sexual assault and it was part of a pattern of booger wiping that you were known for in junior high. Would you care to comment on that? Would you submit your nasal passages for DNA swabbing? This is what they have. This is what they have. This is the best that they have. When you have, when you're in the White House press corps, I would assume, I've never been in the White House press corps. I suppose technically I could go since the Daily Caller is a member of the White House Press Correspondents Association. I could like register and go down there. But if you're a member and you're in that room and you have an opportunity to ask a question, you should have, I would imagine, two or three questions chambered. Good questions, ready to go. Serious questions that you would intend to write about or do a package about if you're on TV to try and get new information, something worthwhile to your audience. Now, you have to have two or three because there are a bunch of people in that room and the first question or even your first and second question could be asked in another form by someone else. Not that that stops these people. They will tend to ask, you know, there'll be 15 questions total and there'll be four different questions. They just ask the same thing over. They just need them asking it so their bosses know they showed up for work that day. They're not drunk in a ditch somewhere or at their girlfriend's house. So if you run through your three questions, by the time it comes to you or you've already asked a previous question, you can just sit there and go, no, we're good, thank you. That's all the information I need. And instead, it tells you that Jeff Mason and his ilk, because there's, I guarantee you, CNN would ask a question like this. CNN probably has their media reporters combing through every one of Kayleigh McEnany's press appearances to find questions exactly like this so that they can try and get her. And Jim Acosta's kicking himself. Why didn't I come up with that quote? What's the matter with me? Did I read it and give it too much context and think it wasn't gotcha enough? So when she handled it, she could have handled it a couple of ways. She could have just said, that's a garbage question and you're taking it out of context. And if you want to get the whole transcript and read the whole thing, then maybe we can talk about it. That could have been one way to do it. The way that Kayleigh McEnany handled it, I thought, was even better because that, to throw just a sampling. Now, that's just a sampling of what the hypocrisy of the left-wing media on coronavirus is. And to throw it in their face and then say, maybe they'll have answers for that and get out. And you can hear, I believe that was Jeff Weaver going, you were prepared for that question. Yes, because you people are that freaking predictable. That's why. Hey, they're going to come at you like a rabid spider monkey for everything you've ever said, every half thing you've ever said. They'll construct sentences. They'll deconstruct tweets. They're going to ask you about your marriage. They're going to ask you about your baby. They're going to ask you about all these other things that are of no importance. So be ready for it. And she absolutely was ready for it. She had those quotes out there on a piece of paper. That's the kind of proactive thing. That is being combative and confrontational without coming across like a jerk. It was done beautifully. So kudos to Kayleigh McEnany for that one. Wonderful, wonderful thing. A non-wonderful thing that has happened recently. I talked about this on my radio show yesterday. It's no good deed goes unpunished. You can file this under that one. The governor of New York has announced his intention to tax the living crap out of anybody who came to New York to help. It's only a slight exaggeration. Channel 9 up in New York has the story. They write, healthcare workers that came to New York to help fight the coronavirus pandemic at its epicenter will have to pay state taxes, according to the governor. Isn't that lovely? Now, this is something that apparently a lot of people don't know, is liberal states mostly and high tax states, which are generally liberal states, what they have pro sports teams come to town, you think, oh, they play for the Boston Red Sox, or they play for the Detroit Tigers, or the Baltimore Orioles. They go to New York, and it's no big deal to play the Yankees, or the Mets, or whatever. They don't just pay taxes in their own state, where they live, where they work. Because a few years ago, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, something like that, I think, I could be wrong, it could be older than that, these liberal governments realized that these multimillionaires were flying into town and making hundreds of thousands of dollars, or tens of thousands of dollars, whatever. A 3 or 4 game series, you're making hundreds of thousands of dollars, especially the really, really successful ones. They wanted a piece of that action. So they began saying that you played 4 games of your 162 games, or just say 16 games of your 162 games season in our city. Therefore, we're going to take 10% of your pay, because that's what you pay. That's what you got. You earned 10% of your money while here. And you think that's wildly unfair and ridiculous. Yes, it is. But welcome to liberal government. So now athletes, you know, they don't have to do it for states like Florida, Texas, Nevada, where they don't have state income taxes. But states got wise to this, and they said, well, we can tax the hell out of not only our own athletes, we can tax the hell out of athletes from other states as well. We can make their already complicated taxes even more wildly complicated. So these pro athletes have to file taxes in every state that they worked, which is where they played games. It seems wildly stupid and unfair, but they saw an advantage to it, so they did it. They said, screw it, let's go for it. I don't know if they get credits or they're not taxed on the money they're earning in other states in their home states. I don't know how that works. I one day would love to earn millions of dollars in every state across the country so that I could figure this out firsthand. I consider maybe I can get an NIH grant for National Endowment for the Arts, an NEA grant to study this or something like that. Lord knows they give out money to everything under the sun, including apparently infectious disease labs in China. So why couldn't they give me a couple of $100 million? But it's become a problem. If I were a professional athlete, I would be insisting, if I were not in a no tax state, I would insist that I only be paid in my contract, that I'm only paid for the games that I play in Florida, for example, where there is no state income tax, and everything else will be done on a voluntary basis, so that my contract explicitly says that when we go to New York, I'm not being paid in New York. I'm just doing it for fun, for shits and giggles. So what did Governor Cuomo say? Well, Governor Cuomo was on with his brother again last night on CNN, and they spent 3 minutes, I'm not kidding you, I thought about playing it, but it's nauseating, 3 minutes joking around about, oh, do you have presidential aspirations? Nobody likes you. Ellen likes you better. Ellen doesn't like you. It was sickening. It was what you would expect two junior high school girls to sound like, but one is a overpaid newsman, in quotes, on CNN, who broke quarantine while in the throes of coronavirus, so spewing it, spreading it around, and the other one ordered nursing homes in his state to take back coronavirus patients, dismissed from the hospital. You got coronavirus, now go back to your nursing home. And the nursing homes were a little bit hesitant, as you might imagine, and he forced them to take them back, essentially creating the pandemic inside the population most susceptible and most likely to die from getting it. So they're sitting around joking. By the way, the governor just discovered 2 days ago that you could clean subway cars. So now he's finally disinfecting subway cars, the Petri dishes on wheels. So the governor of New York said about taxing the hell out of people who went there to help. No good deed goes unpunished. He said, quote, we're not in a position to provide any subsidies right now because we have a $13 billion deficit. So there's a lot of good things I'd like to do. And if we get federal funding, we can do. But it would be irresponsible for me to sit here looking at a $13 billion deficit and say I'm going to spend more money when I can't even pay for the essential services. couple things about that quote, the first line, you're not in a position to provide any subsidies right now. Subsidies. He views not paying taxes as a subsidy. A subsidy is money given to you by the government to do something. It's not a to make your product cheaper, essentially. It's not a subsidy to not tax the living crap out of somebody. Then he continues to say it would be I'm not gonna spend more money. Or it would be irresponsible for me to say I'm going to spend more money. Again, these people went to New York in their time of most desperate need, put their lives on the line, their health on the line, to help out their fellow Americans. And the governor of New York views not taking a piece of their action, if they were paid by another hospital or whatever, not taking a piece of that action as a spending more money. This is a sickness. Liberalism is really some kind of mental disorder. Michael Savage wasn't joking when he said that. It's unbelievable. The thousands of nurses and doctors who flocked to New York City when they put out the siren call, please come help us. They set off the flasher, the lights, said, please come help us. And what happens? New York says, all right, now on your way out the door, we've got to get a piece of your money. It doesn't matter. Go ahead. Give me your money. It's sickening. There's something wrong. Even though the state government, the story continues, asked thousands of people to come to New York from out of state to help fight coronavirus, they will have to pay New York taxes, even on income they might make from their home states that they're paid while in New York. So if you took 2 weeks of your vacation time from Phoenix, Arizona, and you went to New York City, you're being paid, the New York government wants a piece of that action too. Now there's a New York City tax on top of that. I wonder if they're going to try and hammer them now that de Blasio is sitting there going, wait, it's okay to screw over the people who came here to help us? Count me in. Let's do this thing. How sick are these people? What is wrong with these people? They should be, you know what? Here's a special gold card. You get a hotel room whenever you come to town, whatever you want. You come by the mayor's office or the governor's mansion, I will massage your feet. Whenever you come back to New York, whatever it is, please come back. I can't thank you enough. Instead, they go, hey, appreciate the help. Now, let's have that wallet. And they pull out a gun. They're robbing these people. It's a mental disease. There's a sickness in these people. Of course, Cuomo's trying to make the case for a federal bailout. Well, we have to do this. We must do this because we are running short on money. Our revenue is so low. Well, your spending is so high as well. And if you really want a federal bailout, if you were just pissing away money left and right, let's just say I enjoy Legos. I haven't bought Legos in forever, but I enjoy putting together a Lego thing. It's a nice, relaxing thing. And you and I were friends, and you know that I like putting together Legos. And you come over to my house, and it's just filled with ridiculously expensive, because they can be expensive, Lego sets put together or in the box or whatever. And they're all brand new. Like, you see them. There's still, like, a bunch of them, a couple thousand bucks worth in bags sitting around on the floor in the basement. And I say, you know what? I could really use some help that's tight this month. Things are tough. Could you maybe, I don't know, loan me $5,000 or give me $5,000 to help me, really help me out of a pinch? Wouldn't you look at around the room and go, no, screw you. You pissed away at least $5,000 on Legos. Maybe be more maybe take this stuff back. Or if you're really concerned and you say, all right, well, look, I'll consider helping you out, but this stuff's got to go. I'm not giving you $5,000. You got $25,000 worth of Legos sitting around here, still in the box, never opened. You got the receipts. They're in the bags. You take that stuff back to, I don't know, where do you buy Legos? Target now. My default is Toys R Us, but that doesn't exist. You take them back to Target, you get a refund, so you've got $2,500, and then I'll give you the $2,500, and that'll get you to $5,000. That'll make you whole for whatever it is you need $5,000 for. How about that? You imagine that the person goes, no, I want you to give me $5,000. I asked you, I didn't ask you for financial advice. I didn't ask you what I should do with my money. I asked you for $5,000 of your money. That's essentially what Cuomo's trying to pull off here. He doesn't want to have to get his financial house in order. He doesn't want to have to get his state's out of control pensions in order. He just wants somebody to come in and write a big fat check so he doesn't have to make tough choices, so he doesn't have to be a responsible leader. You should tell him to go straight to hell. Tell all these liberal states to go straight to hell. But that's just me. I'm a heartless bastard. An update on the woman Shelley Luther down in Texas, just because we're running out of time here with getting to Tom Fitton, but that one provoked a big response yesterday. The governor and the attorney general have come out and said that they want her free. I don't know why neither one of them could do much of anything. It seems like the governor could do something, but I looked up Texas law, and for the governor to offer a pardon or anything, it has to be a recommendation of the Board of Pardons and Paroles. Seems like they could, I don't know, convene an emergency meeting and get her out by this evening. Hopefully by the time you hear this, she is out. But she has a GoFundMe page established, not for her or not by her, but on her behalf, that has at this point raised almost over $300,000. So the people are coming together to help this woman, and that is great to see. It's also a big old middle finger to that fascist judge who threw her in jail. And how stupid, I mean, how pathetic do you have to be? I just refreshed it. Holy cow, it's almost $400,000. So by the time you hear this, it'll likely be, I don't know, $500,000. So if she has to stay in jail for 7 days, she'll at least have a nice, by the time she gets out, it could be well over $1,000,000, which is awesome, which is great. It's a testament to the American people and the American spirit, and giving the finger to these pricks who would do this. Anyway, it would be nice if, rather than paying lip service to it, the governor and the attorney general would step up and do something more about it. But baby steps, I guess. Just get her out of prison. Lastly, before we get to Tom Fitton, I want to respond to an email from a listener, Lawrence. I promised him I would do it. I almost forgot. I usually do forget, and I apologize for that. But once I get started in the show, I don't have any idea what I'm going to talk about. And by the time it's over, I go, oh, crap, I forgot to say this or talk about that. But this time I actually remembered. He writes in, he compliments for the show, blah, blah, blah. He says, maybe I missed it or maybe you disagree, but why is there not more reportage about the cops? It's very disturbing to me to see these police quickly doing whatever these dictatorial thugs in state capitals tell them. Wisconsin, California, New York, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, Texas, Maine, Michigan. You get my point. In all these states, we are seeing stories and getting images of the cops acting like thugs. And just imagine the 40s, in Germany. Where are the police speaking out and saying, we stand with the people? They are arresting, giving tickets, riding horses, and trying to herd people who are peacefully protesting, threatening, tracking licenses, beating some people in New York City. Yeah, one of them got beat up the other day. The cops now on administrative duty or something like that. Look, I know we always can always find bad apples, and these cops may think they are doing their jobs, but they are to uphold the Constitution, and we all know that these orders are draconian, fascistic, and illegal, yet cops are enforcing them. As a black kid growing up, I'm in my mid-40s, this is Lawrence, not me, I remember seeing the videos of the police beating black people and German shepherds being used on blacks, but I still believe that the police would be there for we the people if any government tried to oppress us. I knew good people were doing good things to help blacks and that things were getting better. I saw that things were better. So this silence by good police is shaking my faith in their goodness and trustworthiness. Now I honestly wonder whose side they would be on if these governors go too far, because these governors are truly pushing people into a corner and forcing a response from normally good people. You'd really love to hear my thoughts, blah, 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 restore the faith. Not sure I can do that. Well, Lawrence, there are stories on both sides of this. There are police officers up in Michigan, three county sheriffs in northern Michigan, northern lower peninsula and the upper peninsula of Michigan. The counties are huge, and most of the cities don't have their own police forces. The city that my dad lives in literally has two stoplights. One is a blinking red light, and the other one is a real stoplight. So they don't have their own police. It's county police. And the county police up there, some of them have said they will not enforce the governor's stay-at-home order for anything other than going out and getting food or something she deems essential. They believe it to be unconstitutional. So it is happening. I will say it is disturbing to a certain degree to see police when they're in confrontations, when they're being the aggressors. In all honesty, the protesters, like, I get it, and I'm going to catch hell for this, but I'm just going to say it, that when people go and gather outside the state house on the grounds and they're running around and they're chanting and they're protesting and they're doing whatever, that's fine. I don't like people who run up and get in the face of cops. And when you try to climb the stairs and they're trying to, look, you go over there, you can protest all you want, just don't storm the building. That's where you kind of lose me, when the people get super hyper aggressive. I have a right to go. Yeah, you do. But you're not going, you're going in there to disrupt. If somebody's coming into your store to rob it, you don't let them in. Right. And I get it. It's public property. And that's where I'm going to catch hell. But yelling, chanting outside is just as effective as chanting inside. The left takes over buildings and stages sit-ins. So when the police say, all right, well, these people, we know what they're coming in for. Let's just stop them from coming in. We've closed this building for health reasons or whatever. Getting up into a cop's face and yelling at them. They're not beating you with a billy club. They're not shoving you down a flight of stairs. That's wildly counterproductive. But Lawrence, I would agree with you that some of it, the aggressive policing in New York, again, why is it always these very liberal places? The guy was being a dick. There's no question the guy was being a dick, but they were enforcing social distancing rules and they were beating up one guy, and then one cop went and beat up another guy. It's all caught on film because everything is filmed. There's nobody comes out looking good in that scenario. You'd like to think that police are better and better trained for that, but there are hundreds of thousands of police officers across the country. There are going to be, I know it's a cliche and you even addressed it in your email, but there are the bad apple scenarios. There's also some people who just blindly follow orders. We've seen that throughout history. I would like to think that should any president ever decide, I'm not leaving office and I'm going to declare myself, I'm going to declare martial law and nobody can come and get me and nobody can get me out of office and I'll be president for life, that unlike most third world hellholes where stuff like that kind of works, it's usually coupled with a few well-placed assassinations and leaders in the military on your side. I'd like to think that the rank and file would not be taking the streets with tanks and machine guns to go and make sure that anybody doesn't get out of line. And if they did, take them out. I still believe that. But that doesn't mean that there won't be some couple of people who would go, well, you know, these are the rules. So, yes, it's a cliche, Lawrence, and you address it in your email, the few bad apples. But remember, you've seen, and I've seen, what, 10, a dozen footage, clips of police officers, many of which are just different angles of the same thing, doing things that are not good. But it's a nation of 330 million people. It is gigantic geographically. And there are, by a factor of what, 40,000 to 1, 150,000 to 1, police officers who aren't doing that. And by the way, civilians who aren't doing that. A lot of people, when you go to a protest and it's big enough, there's always going to be somebody who wants to start something. So don't be that guy. Don't be around that guy. Don't be around those people. And relax a little bit. Yes, keep an eye on it. But don't lose faith. Don't ever lose faith. All right, we are up against it for Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch. Here you go.
All right, as we've been doing throughout the pandemic, we've been trying to keep you up to date on that and everything else that's going on in your world. And today is one of those everything else that's going on in your world kind of days, although there is touching on the pandemic as well. It's a fan favorite. Somebody, people harass me to get on the show more often. Since he's trapped in his home, he had no excuse to not be available. It's Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch. How are you, Tom?
I think I hear the kids calling. I'll be back in an hour.
Exactly. Mine upstairs are currently screaming frozen. Thank God for doors. Man, I don't know. It's crazy, crazy time. First of all, how are you? How are you and Judicial Watch surviving the pandemic and able to, you're still filing Freedom of Information Act requests. You're still doing your job. But how has the mission, or not the mission, but the workings of Judicial Watch changed under this lockdown?
Well, like for most other people, our job is more difficult, and it's disturbing, constitutionally speaking, since we provide oversight over the government. And I think one of the dirty little secrets about this shutdown is that the government is able to do so much more with so little oversight, because those who would provide the oversight and citizens themselves can't exercise fully their right to petition the government, assemble, and things like that. So, for instance, Congress, the Senate's back in session right now. But the groups and individuals who would be in their offices communicating with the Senate and doing other things, they can't do their jobs the way they otherwise would do. And, you know, the D.C. government has shut down the Capitol, and it's harming our constitutional protections as a result.
How do you go about your job then? Is it all just electronic filing? And phone calls? How do you, because you are doing oversight, you have to find like candidates running for office who can't go out and kiss babies and anything. They're having to find new and creative ways to reach out to their audience. How are you guys, how's it affecting the work of oversight?
Well, we still file lawsuits. We still file FOIAs. The FBI and the State Department have stalled on the release of FOIAs, saying they're operations have been curtailed because of the coronavirus, which is a load of bunk in my view. They ought to be able to do the work. The courts are still operating. So hearings we've had have been in, some of them in person, actually. We were in court in California, I think in person the other day. Others have been through teleconference. So the wheels of justice continue to grind.
Unfortunately, oftentimes we're ground under them. Let's start in California, where you guys are trying to, you filed a temporary restraining order to try and enjoin Governor Newsom. He wants to give $75 million in cash benefits through gift cards and other methods to illegal aliens. This is it's a foreign concept, if you can forgive the unintentional pun, to American citizens to be giving away money at a time when we're spending trillions to people who are not in this country legally. What is the status of that case, and what are the prospects?
Well, we were in court yesterday seeking a temporary restraining order, and the judge said that we were likely to succeed on the merits. We're representing taxpayers who object to the governor spending that money on his own without legal authority. And the court said, yeah, well, you know, you're likely to succeed on the merits, meaning, yeah, we suspect that the judge has, that the governor has no ability to spend this law money lawfully, but it's in the public interest that these illegal aliens get this illegal cash. So she allowed it to go forward.
It's amazing how they can read the plain language of the law and say, yeah, but still, you know,
yeah, that I mean, the law, there's an acknowledgement that the law prohibits the spending, but because it's, quote, an emergency, he can do it anyway. And in my view, the law shouldn't take a holiday because of a pandemic. And, you know, if you want to know why our rights are under assault, why our freedoms are under assault, it's judicial decision making, like we saw yesterday, where the courts are failing to uphold the rule of law in the face of aggressive abuse by elected officials over the rights of the of American citizens. That's disturbing.
Now, where does that case go next? You just work it up the food chain, but the money could be gone by then.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to appeal it immediately to see if we can stop it, but we'll see. It's California, so it's always a kind of a uphill battle, but the rule of law deserves to be vindicated, places like California especially, where it's under attack.
We see that everywhere in this country. We have governors declaring emergencies, and we've never had an emergency like this. So it seems that they're testing the limits of how far they can stretch their authority, spending money, criminalizing things without legislature criminalizing something. That's where the laws are supposed to come from. What, as you look out over the 50 states, what do you see as some of the most egregious abuses of power by these governors in time of emergency?
You know, my understanding of the law, I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, I've kind of been looking at this pretty carefully, is that if you need to be quarantined, Derek, let's say you're sick, and there's a police power, in theory, that allows the government to say, you got to stay in your house, you can't go anywhere until you feel better, you know, where there's some reasonable assurance that you're not contagious. Yeah, but that's a limited, time-limited, discriminate, meaning it's directed only at you, quarantine. I mean, the idea that our constitutional system, common law, whatever you want to call it, allows governors to indiscriminately tell everyone to stay at home, close all businesses for an indefinite period of time, it's not lawful. To describe it is to tell you, is to kind of highlight its craziness in terms of the rule of law. You know, to tell the sick and not sick they can't go out, to tell all businesses they can't operate no matter what they might do to accommodate reasonable health and safety standards, it's just it's not something that is based on law. It's based on panic decision making by governors. I understand why it happened initially. There's no more excuse now. There's no science behind it. There never really was any science behind it. It was a national experiment on Americans. And the consequences are as dire as anything we're facing from the coronavirus pandemic. Certainly, health is being destroyed. Jobs are being destroyed. Our lives are being torn asunder. Our national fabric is being rent. It's terrible.
We had Shelley Luther down in Texas sentenced to 7 days in prison and a $7,000 fine for daring to open her perfectly legal business and cut hair.
And the governor and attorney general object to what the judge did. I don't know if she's going to go to jail or not, but maybe the governor can. I don't know if he can technically pardon her to prevent her from going to jail. But that business legally can operate on Friday, and the judge put her in jail today or yesterday. Incredible.
And for 7 days, and fined her $7,000 when she said she opened it because she was afraid of losing, not being able to pay her mortgage, which you would think you would at least have some understanding with. And up in Wisconsin, we have a governor who assigned the health minister, whatever the official title is, the authority to create penalties for breaking the law that she also was given the authority to declare to be a law. It is. I know you guys focus mainly on the federal government, but you also focus on states as well. How do we pull up out of this? Is there a way to get back to normal after this? Is there a way to regain trust in government when the government declared you under house arrest and a criminal if you leave your house? You get the sentence, and if you leave the house, you commit the crime.
Well, the voters and citizens demonstrating and voicing their displeasure. I mean, the constitutional issues are significant. The freedom issues are significant. Yeah, you know, one issue that I think is pressing that I don't think enough politicians are talking about is the fact that 30 million people are out of work. And there's no urgency here in Washington or in any of the states to I shouldn't say in any of the states, but in too many of the states to get them back to work. I mean, the consequences of this destruction of our economy doesn't seem to matter to these government officials. And why is that? Because most of these government officials get paid no matter what happens. They'll probably have a job no matter what happens. Even if they lose, they'll have a job. And certainly here in Washington, D.C., I don't hear any sense of urgency. Even, you know, the White House is, frankly, if the president weren't president, I think we'd all still be in shutdown right now. Because, it's his skepticism and him pushing back against this that has gotten us, the governors, to do what they've done thus far. Now, the governors are kind of accelerating it, some of them. But, you know, as long as you got major swaths of the country still shut down, like New York and New Jersey, I mean, we may say, well, those are blue states. Well, they're American states, and they're key to our economy just the way other big states are. And we can't have New York and California shut down. If I were the president, I'd intervene. And yank the yoke of oppression off the citizens of California, New York, and elsewhere. Let them get back to work and give them their lives and freedom back.
That would be great, but just as the president says, he doesn't have. Well, is the Justice Department someplace you guys, you know, obviously file Freedom of Information Act requests against a lot? I imagine you know a lot of people in the Justice Department in the permanent class. They probably hate you, but is there any move? The Justice Department, I know the Attorney General has said that he's watching these lockdown orders, but is there anything that they could do? I mean, ultimately, we do have a federalist system where the states do have a lot of leeway.
They don't have leeway to override the Constitution, though. You know, our First Amendment rights, our rights to property, as the Attorney General has pointed out, to interfere with commerce as they're doing is also suspect. I think the Attorney General, the Justice Department, has filed a few pleadings here and there on religious freedom cases, which are, generally speaking, slam dunk type of issues. My concern is there continues to be a gap between the Attorney General's rhetoric and DOJ action in this area.
Why do you think that is?
For the reasons you suggested, the permanent bureaucracy at DOJ has zero interest in getting in the way of the government class that is asserting its authority, that they may pull back a little bit or pull back to let us get back to work eventually, but will never be pulled back sufficiently in terms of the new ground they've set as to where government can go to tell you what to do and how to do it.
Ultimately, Congress is supposed to do oversight of the executive branch. And they don't, they seem to have interest in certain things and not other things. Taking this back to the impeachment end, we still don't have all of the testimonies that Congressman Schiff received in the intelligence community, do we?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. So these Nunes and company, they did a thorough investigation. They deposed, I think, over 50 witnesses. And so what Congress does, they send this over to the executive branch to declassify the deposition transcripts. And much of that has been declassified for over a year now. And Congress or the committee has voted unanimously to turn the material over to the public, but it hasn't been done yet. So Rick Grenell, who is the former ambassador to Germany, now the acting head of the Office of Director of National Intelligence, he's the DNI, he sent a letter to Schiff essentially saying, here are these transcripts. They're all for the public to see now. And if you don't release them, we will.
Why hasn't Schiff, do you suppose?
Because they document the Spygate abuses of the Obama Schiff gang and the harassment and the coup attack on President Trump. So they don't want any information about that coming out.
Are we going to see that? How long of a timeline did Ambassador Grenell give to Schiff?
Oh, I didn't know what the timeline was, but I think it's going to be in the next few weeks. That's for sure.
How much of this do we still not know? Is that even a knowable question?
We don't know what the DOJ was doing still. We don't have any testimony from them, more or less. There's a little bit in the IG report. We don't know a lot.
What is
all of this spying going? We don't know how many FISA warrants there were. Who else was targeted?
No.
What about the unmaskings? We don't know about the unmaskings. There's still a lot of information there. They're still withholding 8,000 emails from Judicial Watch between Page and Strzok, refusing to turn over any text messages. There's a lot we don't know, Derek. It's terrible.
Are they giving a reason for these things? It can't be national security purposes.
Oh, no. It's just they just say it's taking time to release the records. And we'll look at them at a rate of 500 pages a month. So at the rate they're looking at, which, of course, has stopped completely because of the coronavirus excuse, we won't get these emails until at least the end of next year in toto. And that's, again, only the emails they give us. It's not talking about the emails they've already withheld. So that's when the fighting begins about what they've withheld. And they're also taking the position legally that text messages between Page and Strzok and text messages sent out by Andrew McCabe, the corrupt deputy director of the FBI who was fired, all of those are not subject to FOIA. We can't get them in theory at all from them, according to their legal briefs.
The president of the United States has absolute authority to classify or declassify things. Could he not wave his magic pen and say, release these now?
Yes.
Why do you think there's a reluctance there?
That's what he should do.
Why do you think there's a reluctance?
You know, my guess is the Justice Department and the FBI and the State Department, they all presume to be, quote, independent of the president. And they don't like the president. And they tell the president, oh, don't do this because you'll get people nervous and upset. And my view is the president has got to step in. You know, in terms of the major accountability efforts, it's only happened with the president stepping in personally and directly to get things done, whether it be firing Comey, hiring Barr, and taking these other proactive measures to make sure that there's at least some accountability. And there's more to be done. Look, you know, at any time he exercises authority lawfully and correctly in the Ukraine-Biden scandal, and he was impeached for it. So you can just imagine what he's being told if he wants to do anything else like that.
Now, obviously, the Freedom of Information Act is a great tool, and it's a powerful tool if it's acted upon by government officials that are supposed to act upon it. They often don't. They drag their feet, as you've laid out. There's no such tool for the American people to get the inner workings of Congress, is there? The Freedom of Information Act does not apply to Congress. You can't find out if Adam Schiff was coordinating, just hypothetically, was coordinating with some outside group or anything like that. You have no access, no legal standing to access their records?
Yes and no. The Freedom of Information Act does not apply to Congress. But we, for instance, just sued Adam Schiff and the House Intelligence Committee to get access to his illicit secret subpoenas of the president's lawyer's phone records that he later abusively published. Using a common law right of access theory under the law, meaning that, these are government records and we have a general right to access here in the District of Columbia, and they're not protected by the speech or debate clause because it was an impeachment effort. And so it was a separate issue that doesn't keep the records privileged. And of course, Schiff came back saying he has a sovereign immunity, the Congress has sovereign immunity, he has all these privileges, and we can't get any of the records. So Schiff's current position is he should be able to subpoena and take the phone records of any American in the world, any American, and then publish them with no accountability to the law. Now, if a cop took your phone records without a subpoena or a subpoena approved by a court, you know, they'd be facing some jail time. But Schiff thinks that he's above the law, and so does Pelosi. And Pelosi's now spending your tax dollars. You want to know what we were doing during the coronavirus fight, during coronavirus? We're having to respond to objections from House lawyers to our lawsuit. So when you say, Pelosi says, you know, we're not coming back to work. Oh, no, they're working. They're working to stop Judicial Watch from getting answers about Schiff's abuse of power in his impeachment attack on President Trump.
Well, Nancy can sit back and direct that one from in front of her $24,000 fridge. Right. Yeah, in front of her massive fridge that is smaller than most New York City apartments. Also, in you brought up again, and we're going back to the coronavirus, you guys are trying to get communications between Dr. Fauci and the World Health Organization. What are you looking for? What are you asking for there? What are you looking for there?
Well, we're representing your colleagues at the Daily Caller News Foundation, who had asked for communications between Fauci and WHO during the coronavirus period, and other documents within the NIH about coronavirus and the specific communications. You know, what did WHO tell Fauci and his colleagues about the coronavirus? And were they acting as cutouts for China, as everyone has concluded? So it's a pretty simple request. And the fact we haven't gotten any answers, or the Daily Caller News Foundation hasn't gotten any answers, suggests they may not want the answers to be public.
What's the hardest bit of what's the hardest department to try and get to comply with the Freedom of Information Act request?
Oh, they're all difficult now.
Really? Even with a Republican president?
I mean, it used to be some departments were better than others, but now it's at the Clinton email case ruined it. She ruined FOIA.
How so?
Because the agencies just took under Obama, the agencies started taking this hardcore position because they wanted to all protect Clinton. So they all got very aggressive in terms of refusing to turn over documents, and then fighting you once you're in court for every inch of ground in terms of transparency. We have to sue, we have to sue to get the time of day these days.
You guys are out there. Congress has the ability to do this as well, and a bigger hammer than the Freedom of Information Act request. You can't expect the House of Representatives to get anything particularly interesting that might that isn't have the partisan slant. But the Senate doesn't seem, you hear saber rattling from Lindsey Graham every once in a while. I'm going to hold a hearing on this. I'm thinking about this, that, or the other thing. Is the Senate doing enough to hold the sort of deep state accountable in your mind?
No, it's not. And what's happening in the Senate is that, Graham has talked about doing hearings and bringing witnesses. And there's always a reason why he doesn't do it every time he's asked about it. But the real reason is there's this kind of rule in the Senate that they need the agreement, effectively speaking. It's not technical because they run the Senate. The majority does in the end. But practically speaking, they need the minority to issue any subpoenas, and they don't want to fight with them about it, so they don't do it.
So it's just the Senate is kind of a go along to get along kind of body, and that's
it's sending letters and hoping people respond. And look, the difference between FOIA and the congressional oversight process is that FOIA, you're in court. And there's accountability for the process. The government has to come in. They have to say there are documents, there aren't documents, and explain why they're not turning them over. The debate between oversight and the political branches is very different, just because it's politics in a more traditional sense. So whether they get documents or not, it's a political question. And so as a result, you sometimes don't get documents in Congress that you're able to get through FOIA. I mean, sometimes it's the exact opposite, but because sometimes Congress gets documents we never find out about because Congress doesn't release everything it gets.
Do we need a FOIA sort of process, or probably more tailored, since they'd have to write it, more narrowly focused? But is there a possibility of getting Congress to say, all right, we have to open our books? The Open the Books Act will give you access to non-classified information that we get. If it's ours, it's yours, sort of thing. Do you think there's any appetite for that up on the Hill? Seems like that could benefit and hurt both parties.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only reason it might go forward, because both sides have something to lose or gain from it. On the other hand, it certainly makes it more difficult. I've long suggested, I've testified to Congress a few times, that Congress should subject itself to transparency laws, and they don't. The federal judiciary is also exempt from transparency laws, which is also inappropriate. And I think you can have a transparency law that allows respects the privileges of the judiciary and the Congress under our constitutional system, but also provides more accountability. I mean, for instance, the personnel records, the administrative records related to the slush fund sexual harassment issue, and specifically I'm thinking of Joe Biden, there's no reason that type of material couldn't be subject to FOIA.
It really is shocking that most people don't know that the Senate records of a United States senator, his speeches, his notes, who he met with, are locked in a public university, and he set the terms. He got to dictate the terms under which they could ever be released to the public.
Yeah, and that's not unusual.
I know that when I left the Senate in 2006, Conrad Burns, he purchased his servers. I had never heard that before, but he purchased the Senate servers legally, and that meant that he had control over all of the electronic communications in the offices. Now, theoretically, if Strzok and Page's texts to each other because they were on their government-issued phones are public information, why should not an elected official have their electronic communications subject to the same thing?
Well, the only technical issue is the speech or debate clause, but that, you know, that's a privilege that they can exempt records from disclosure under. It doesn't mean that other records, you know, related to the administration of the offices and like the office of the architect. You know, they spend a boatload of money. Why can't we get FOIA to them? It's not speech or debate. What about the Capitol Hill police? They're not subject to FOIA.
Are you finding, because you guys, the Obama administration, you guys did most of the journalism that took place from a critical point of view during the Obama administration. You discovered the Hillary Clinton's secret server, things like that, things that normally would have been done, but just weren't. Was there a lack of FOIA requests filed by journalists during the Obama administration, and has that returned in the Trump administration, or are they still just kind of relying on you guys to discover everything, and then they'll just sort of steal it with credit?
No, I mean, journalists are always doing FOIA, but, you know, their interests are different than ours. They're liberal activists, and so they're looking at particular issues that pursue or advance their narrative. As conservatives, we're skeptical of government. We think a lot of it is corrupt. So we have a different approach. But in my view, a lot of the legacy media enterprises can't fairly be described as journalistic in any serious way anymore. In my view, they're advocacy groups that sometimes do journalism, but they're advocacy groups. And so in terms of, and I will insist that Judicial Watch's journalism in the areas that we look at is more significant, more substantial, more reliable than anything being produced these days by legacy media.
Well, you guys don't do any of your journalism based on anonymous sources, right?
No, yeah, we sometimes get sources and leads like anyone else. But, you know, when we do FOIA documents, it's a straightforward, these are the documents. I mean, we don't say, oh, there's this, someone read me this document and here's what it says, even though I haven't seen it. You know, we prefer to get the documents. And obviously we don't break the law like journalists regularly do, in my view, in publishing classified information knowingly, conspiring with others to get it published to target people you don't like, which is what they did multiple times with President Trump and are still doing to this day.
Talk about Michael Flynn for a little, just for a few minutes as we wrap it up here. He has, just every day there seems to be some new revelation that he has been targeted and railroaded and exculpatory evidence withheld. What's the goal here? To try and get him fired? To try and get him to lie? What is it? People were horrified, rightly so, when that was discovered. But is that really all that uncommon?
Well, it's not as uncommon as it ought to be. It's really uncommon when it comes to targeting an official in the White House or a candidate for president or president of the United States. You know, these weren't mafia figures. These weren't terrorists. This was their political opposition, the Obama gang's political opposition. And they broke the law and they broke the rules to bring it down. And I don't know why General Flynn is still facing charges from the Justice Department. I don't know what's happening there. There's been this big gap between what we hear from the Justice Department leadership and what actually gets done. And I'm not seeing much get done in the way of accountability here. I mean, Department should pull back the charges. And if they don't within a time certain, I would, if I were president, I would direct the Justice Department to drop the charges.
Is it a political decision at this point? Is that they're continuing to be, that Barr is continuing to be hands off, or is it sort of a race against time with the Durham investigation? And maybe I don't understand the politics of it either, but I know that if the president directed the Justice Department to drop charges against General Flynn, that would, you know, that would be an enormous scandal, even though it would be perfectly within his rights and power to do so.
Well, you know, the Justice Department sees itself as independent, which is constitutionally an abomination of an idea. And someone needs to remind them that they answer to the Constitution and the President of the United States, who was put into office to run and enforce our laws. And in my view, when a president sees misconduct and abuse of power and illegal acts by Justice Department, he should step in if the Justice Department isn't doing the steps necessary to clean itself up. And I don't see that either the FBI or Justice Department are cleaning itself up. I just see investigations that go on world without end, and no accountability, no prosecutions of any misconduct.
Well, that's cheery.
Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe there are all these, you know, like we've been told, the grand juries and secret testimonies. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. And these are one of these cases where I hope my skepticism is proven to be completely wrong, and that everything comes out right in the end. But in my experience, past behavior is a good indication of future behavior in politics.
Does the government have a problem investigating itself? Because I get emails all the time from listeners talking about what's going on with Durham. Why is this taking so long? What's happening? I know the problems you guys have, the resistance of the bureaucrats to want to comply with any FOIA requests. But it would seem like internally they should have access to everything. But is there resistance within the government to the government?
Well, the government doesn't have any problem investigating itself. If you're on the wrong end of it, they'll investigate you too and drive you from office like they did General Flynn. Look what they did to President Trump. Completely unconstitutional investigation. There's no problem investigating itself. These are folks who are protected within the agencies from serious accountability. And it's because politically, as you keep on highlighting that word, and it's a good word to focus on, there are political decisions made. But if the government wants to do it, they can do whatever they want. The Justice Department can send over U.S. Marshals to the FBI and take all their servers to make sure all the documents have been turned over. There's no legal prohibition on that. Politically, it's difficult to do. But that's just fear-based decision-making. That's not law and order.
So should people have faith that there will be accountability in their government in the case of the Russia spying?
Well, we get accountability through disclosing what went on. So there's kind of a rough justice as a result. But in terms of people getting prosecuted, I suspect maybe a few people will be prosecuted who they can't avoid, like that FBI official who supposedly changed a document to make Carter Page from an FBI, a CIA asset and patriot to a enemy of the state. And maybe he gets prosecuted or pled out. But even then, I suspect it will be a slap on the wrist. I'm not seeing any evidence, though, Derek, that the senior levels of the agencies are being investigated criminally in a way that suggests that they'll be prosecuted. But maybe it's all being done in secret and I'm naive. But, you know, look, when there's a serious criminal investigation, there are grand juries, there are people testifying, there are lawyers yelling about it, especially grand jury investigations targeting a serious political figure or former government officials. They can't keep that secret. And we're expected to believe it's all being kept secret now. And I don't buy it.
Neither do I, sadly.
That's why we have Judicial Watch. I mean, we just keep on doing the work because we just don't believe the government's going to do it unless it's pushed or, you know, if we want accountability, we just have to do it the way we're doing it, which is through independent oversight.
Well, I'm glad that Judicial Watch is. You guys are 25 years old this year? Is that really the number?
Yeah.
Good Lord. How long have you been there?
I've been there since 1998, so 22 years or so.
What was the first thing you remember working on? 1998 was right.
Yeah, it was an FBI scandal. It was like we came in and we were pursuing the Clinton gang taking the FBI files of Republicans over to the White House, and we had litigation over that.
Well, yeah, that's the blackmail material.
Yeah, so yeah, nothing's changed in that regard, right? I mean, it's the same old, same old.
Well, you don't actually hear about abuses of that nature by the Trump administration, though. Maybe it's because they don't know they can get away with it. I don't know, but you haven't heard those types of scandals. You hear allegations of incompetence, but you don't really hear allegations of, except for vague ones about this ambassador stayed at his hotel. You don't hear the abuses of power against political enemies that you've heard about from the Clinton administration, the Obama administration, obviously.
Yeah, you know, usually the president is out there victimizing people like Obama did with the IRS and targeting Trump. In the case of President Trump, he's the crime victim. He's the one being targeted for abuse.
He's the enemy of the deep state,
that's
if you will. They like their gravy train rolling. They want it. Tom Fitton, judicialwatch.org. Anything we should look forward to in the coming weeks coming out? You just want to hint around? I know you're not going to tell me, but anything you want to hint about, maybe watch next week because X, Y, or Z?
We're still fighting for Hillary Clinton's deposition. A court ordered that she be deposed on her emails, and she filed a desperate appeal that we think isn't going to go anywhere. At least we hope it isn't. So she could be getting deposed over the next month or two if the courts, and it's a big if the courts follow the facts and the laws, we suggest that they should.
Do you really think she seems to have selective Alzheimer's when it comes to anything that she's directly has her fingerprints on? She can't remember, which is the lawyer's defense when a lawyer testifies. If you can't remember or if you don't want to remember, just say you can't recall. She's very good at that.
Well, it's easier to put that face on when you're writing answers to questions, which is why the court says that we get to question her in person.
So how long till we find out on that, do you think?
I don't know, but, you know, it was an emergency petition by her, so emergencies presumably are handled more timely than non-emergencies, so we expect over the next month or two to hear something.
Would that be videotaped if it happens?
I don't know.
Would you be in the room if that happens?
Maybe.
There you go. Tweet the whole damn thing out. Tom Fitton, judicialwatch.org. You're doing the Lord's work, and thanks for taking some time for us today.
You're welcome, Derek. Thanks for the coverage.
One last thing before we go. The Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments via video chat. And one of the things about video chat that people don't seem to understand, including group chats, is that just because you're not talking doesn't mean the rest of the group isn't listening. The Supreme Court learned that the hard way. We don't know who this is, but we also don't know the location of Eric Swalwell. Pay very close attention to the background noise, a 15-second clip. Pay very close attention to the background noise in this case. The case itself doesn't matter. It's the ambient noise, like my daughter screaming in the next room, that matters.
I'm going to be saying, hey, call your congressman and change these laws that apply to banks. And what the FCC has said is that when the subject matter of the call ranges to the topics, then the call is transformed, and it's yes. A call that would have been allowed and it's no longer allowed. And so I think...
Yes, somebody dropped a deuce in the middle of Supreme Court oral arguments yesterday. It's probably not the first time that has happened since Larry Flint has been in the Supreme Court, but still... Just shut your door. Be aware that if you haven't muted your microphone, everything going on in your house is going on in that conference call. So, yes, make judicious use of that mute button before you deuce. Or just let it mellow there for a while, okay? And then flush afterwards. Sometimes nature calls and you got to take the call, but don't flush the toilet while on a video conference with the Supreme Court. Or it could have been one of the justices. We don't know who it was, but somebody's guilty. Like I said, we don't know the location of Eric Swalwell during that time, so he's a suspect as well. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, spread the word, share on social media, tell your friends, blah, blah, blah. Tell your enemies if you don't like the show. Tomorrow, wait, what day is? Yes, tomorrow is Friday. Hell, I don't even know. There'll be a show tomorrow, probably. I'll see you then.